Are we going?
We're coming.
Okay. Thank you very much, everybody, for attending. Brilliant to see so many people here for this first talk of the Teletext Fest here in Cambridge. Thank you, thank you, thank you for attending. But before we start, I'd like to remind everyone that we have a charity collection bucket somewhere in the building for the Teletext Facebook group stalwart Cara Moon, real name Matthew, who's currently undergoing treatment for stage 4 cancer. He lives in Japan, where immunotherapy is not covered under health insurance. Any money given here today is going to go towards this treatment. Thank you. And we'd also like to briefly mention our sponsors, Open Broadcast Systems, who provide fantastic broadcast software for video and audio transport using off-the-shelf IT equipment. If you have an outside broadcast, they are the guys to contact. Also, if you need to run Teletext subtitles, give them a call or visit obe.tv, that's obe.tv, and mention the Teletext Fest. I'm sure they'll give you a great deal. And also, if you need Teletext subtitles, the man sitting right next to me has a fantastic gadget for that sort of thing, but more about that later. So yes, I am Dan, and the gentleman over here...
I'm Carl, and...
Yeah. And his mic's not working.
Hello? I've got to go really close right now. Hello everyone, yeah. Oh, do I already sound like that? Oh no. Alright, I preferred it earlier when I was like Barry White. Thanks for working on this long, Dan. I mean, it's today's like a big festival, big culmination of things, a lot of preparation gone into it, and it's nice to actually see people. The last time I recorded this with Dan, I was by myself with a monitor. So I'm just sort of like picturing that right now, so I can just get a bit of a flow going. But thanks very much for coming.
Yeah, it's very weird doing this in front of people, isn't it? Usually it's just me and the cat.
And the mouse.
And almost the mouse, yeah. Yes, of course.
excellent. Welcome to our first panel. We've got some guests here from the past and the present and now, haven't we, Dan? So,
yes.
It's an enormous pleasure to introduce Peter. It's probably better, actually, to introduce Peter with the list of things that he hasn't been on or in the last couple of months.
Crime Watch.
Yeah, Crime Watch is perhaps the only thing just yet.
Unconfirmed.
he's absolutely brilliant to have him along for this because he's the TFAX godfather and the inceptor of that, so that's really good. And the gentleman next to me as well, a very illustrious
dear,
yep. And it's an unexpected pleasure to have you along as well, and we'll be asking lots of questions about that. But I need your name, sir.
Mort Smith.
It's Mort Smith, everybody. So, yes.
Is that your full name, sir?
No, it's not. It's Ian Morton Smith. But I've been called Mort Smith all my life, so you know, everybody knows me as Mort.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
In a specially built newsroom on the 7th floor, an embryonic CFAX editorial unit has taken shape under the guidance of a journalist editor, Colin McIntyre. Alongside him, a group of pioneers have started to turn this fledgling into a new form of journalism. CFAX sub-editor Ian Morton Smith.
Like any news service, CFAX depends largely for its output on news agencies. Here we have a teleprinter from the Press Association. And here we have the BBC's own news service, General News Service at Broadcasting House. The sub-editor, when he wanted to get some news, would tear off the paper and then walk over to the visual display unit, which is simply a television monitor linked electronically to a typewriter keyboard, and then onto the computer.
Okay, should we start with some questions for Mort? What do you think? Or would that be favouring Mort?
I think we could...
One for both, Mort, maybe?
Yeah. We'll go with both. Yeah, that's fine.
Do you have one to start with?
I think I do. Yeah, so you can use TFAX... I haven't got the rhythm of this. Sorry, Dan. I'm absolutely... Because I've just sort of like come straight in.
That's absolutely fine. We can fix it in post.
Yeah.
These people watching here, they don't mind.
So if you could kick off with the first question then, Dan, and I can sort of kick off and get going on this.
Okay. So I guess from both an engineering standpoint and a technical standpoint, do you think teletext was a difficult thing to work with in comparison to other technology around at the time?
Do you want to take that, Peter, or do you want me to go...
Well, I was only in Teletext since 1999, so I'll hand over to Mort to say what it was like in the beginning.
It was interesting in the beginning. I joined CFAX, BBC CFAX, in 1974. I was the first full-time journalist that they took on to work on the Teletext project at Television Centre. And in the early stages, it was very much Mickey Mouse stuff. There was a core store machine that was based in the central apparatus room of Television Centre, and the CFAX editorial office was on the seventh floor. And in order to create a Teletext page, we had a very sort of prehistoric VDU made by a company called Lean Shear that you could actually create the Teletext pages on. We had one or two teleprinter machines with news services coming into the newsroom. So you'd rip off a piece of a teleprinter copy, go and type up a news page, obviously check it very carefully, and you'll understand why I say that in a couple of minutes. Make sure that everything was right, there were no spelling mistakes. And then you pushed a button and it printed a punched tape about 4 feet long, 1 inch wide, and you had to write on the end of that punched tape the time, the date and the contents of the page that you just printed. You then had to run down three flights of stairs to the central apparatus room, put the tape into a tape reader, push a button so that it actually read it, and push another button which put it on air. And then you had to run back up three flights of stairs to the CFAX newsroom, only to discover that despite your careful checking, you've made a spelling mistake, at which point you had to go through the whole bloody process again, which was fairly entertaining. So it did concentrate the mind wonderfully on making sure that everything was accurate.
Did people write in to correct you on things? Oh. Say, oh, you made a spelling mistake here.
Absolutely, and that never stopped through the, however long it was, the 40-odd years that I worked in Teletext. And it didn't matter whether it was the BBC, ITV, overseas in America, or Channel 4. We used to get dozens and dozens of people writing in, phoning in if you made a mistake. But that's great, because that just meant they were watching it and reading it.
Any particularly memorable mistakes? Or would you rather not say?
I was going to say, none that I'm prepared to discuss at this point.
Okay, fair enough. So, Peter, Teletext difficult to work with, do you think?
Well, I joined in 1999 at an equipment manufacturer called MRG Systems, and the main person that I worked with was a chap, a boffin from the BBC called Peter Weitzel, who was a real definition of a mad boffin, and he hated having any bit of bandwidth wasted. Every single bit had to do something. So any standard that he was involved in, like PDC, was incredibly convoluted. Bits were shuffled and hammed and put in all sorts of orders, and wherever he could squeeze some more data in, he would. So making the equipment to run to his specification was a bit of a nightmare, but any mad ideas he came up with, we implemented for him, and then it worked out for the company, because then we could make 50 copies and of the equipment, and half would go to London and the rest would go to the regions, and then he'd come up with some other harebrained scheme that we could do. So it was a great loss when he left the BBC, because we also didn't get very much Teletext work after that, but it was very interesting, and spent many hours in the top of Television Centre trying to work out the kinks in the systems.
The Ray Davises. So when did the Teletext work stop, roundabout?
Well, it carried on a lot longer than you'd have thought, because in about 2005, 2006, they needed something to go from analog TV to digital TV, but they weren't ready to stop Teletext just yet, so there was a lot of work on new equipment, new digital equipment, and signalling systems. There's a system called Presfax, which sent the whole schedule from London out to the regions, and it was all timed to a 25th of a second over Teletext, over their internal Teletext network. So that was a very busy time for us when they were building the broadcast centre in White City. And then as soon as that was all stable, we got no more orders at all, and then it was shut down. The Teletext system, the CFAX system, was shut down in 2012, I think. But my equipment still carried on for a few more years, and it's only just the last few weeks that they've decommissioned the teletext signalling system called PresFax and HudFax, because if you look on eBay right now, you can buy the equipment that was used. I wouldn't recommend getting a DTP 800, because that was rubbish. If you try and go for the ATP 600s. But you can get a couple of inserters for £50 right now, because I know they've just decommissioned that system.
So who knows? Maybe the Computing Museum might be selling them right now. Are you selling them, Peter, by any chance?
Unfortunately, I don't have any of them. Any that were made ended up going straight out to customers. And in the end, it was a case of cobbling together bits and pieces that we could scrape up off the floor and put together anything that would work. It got shipped out of the door, and then anybody else had to say, sorry, we don't make them anymore.
You haven't got a skip outside your house with your DTPs in there, then?
No, there was a skip outside in Stonehouse, Gloucestershire, and a lot of stuff went out, and so it's all lost now. But anything that worked, it was shipped. So
it was what? Sorry,
I think it was shipped.
Oh, sorry.
Yes. So the next question, really, to both you guys, it's quite interesting to have a dichotomy of the beginning and the sunset years of teletext in the UK, because. Did you, Mort, did you ever feel that you were on the cusp of something special? Did you really think, you know, this technology is here to stay?
Absolutely, very much so. I worked at CFAX for 7 years, from literally the beginnings when there were about four decoder encrypt sets in the UK, right up to Margaret Thatcher arriving to mark the sale of the 1 millionth teletext set. I think that was 1978 or 79, I can't remember. But certainly when we, as a newsroom team, when we started working on CFAX and it really started to gather momentum, we felt that it was just the best news medium in the world. It was the fastest. Obviously, it predates the internet by a very long way. But it was an ideal and very simple opportunity to get news out to the public as quickly as somebody could type. You didn't have to wait to break into a programme. Which traditionally that's the way that you would have, the BBC or the ITV companies would have done it beforehand. You could actually type the news story, press a button, and it was on air instantly. And one very good example of that was Saturday afternoons, which I used to love at CFAX, because we were doing all the latest football scores and sports results, racing results. And it was always a bit of a contest between CFAX and the ITV equivalent Oracle to see who could get the latest football scores on air fastest. And I'd like to claim that CFAX, generally speaking, won. But it was great fun.
Well, I can agree with the getting the football results on air fastest, because in the 80s I worked at ITN, and I was often on news at 10 in the evenings, and it was my job to animate the football results. I don't know if you remember the football rolling across the top of the screen and revealing Barclays League Division 1 or something like that. That was my job, to press the button. And that's another story. We had a machine called a VT80, and that could produce 12,000 sprites on the screen and move them all each field. So it's quite an extraordinary machine. But I was sitting there at about 9:30, and I knew I had to get the football results in. So I had CFAX up, and I was watching page something, I can't remember which number it was. Well, this would have been the early 80s. So the numbers all changed after that, I think. But it might have been 302. So I was watching for the midweek results to come in. And then as soon as they come in, I could type them into my machine. And, 10 or 15 minutes later, I'd get a piece of paper with the scores. So I could just check that I'd done it right. And then I'd be ready to play them out on news at 10 when Alistair Burnett read them out. And but I never remembered what the scores were, because I really don't like sport. So the cab driver would ask me on the way home, what was the result of the Chelsea match? I said, well, I typed it in, but I can't remember what it was.
I just think it's lovely to hear that the BBC were actually providing the output for ITV at this point.
Oh, that's quite funny. And Would there be, I know like in the world of maps, they'll deliberately put, a map publisher would deliberately put an error in.
Just a Mount Weasel.
A Mount Weasel, yes. So that will be basically, you'll be inserting something that clearly isn't there, normally decoy pond, just to see who else is lifting your work and publishing it elsewhere. I was just wondering, was there any sort of practice that went on between the two teletext providers in the 1980s?
I don't think so. I never remember that sort of thing occurring. One of the things that I suppose it's slightly related is that in 1976, I was asked by the editor of CFAX to produce a Christmas magazine, which consisted of lots of background information and folklore stories about Christmas and how it had evolved. And we came up with the idea that we were going to run a bingo competition. And the way that we ran it was we got the BBC press department to print 1,000 cards with different numbers on. And the way that people could actually find out and take part in the bingo game was to go through every single page and all the rolling subpages on CFAX, pressing a reveal button on each page until they found the number and you had to write it on the card. Now, when we came up with this idea, I thought, nobody is going to do this. We actually got requests for 6,000 packs of these cards, and half of them came back. So 3,000 very sad people had sat there all over Christmas pushing the reveal button on every single page on the CFAX Christmas magazine.
Mart, I have to admit, I did that even when the bingo contests weren't running. But then, admittedly, I am a bit sad. So I'd like to move the conversation on slightly. Question for both of you. I believe you touched on KeyFacts maybe there, Mort, but can you both tell us some of the countries that you've visited in your time working for and within Teletext, the exotic countries around the world?
Well, I was very lucky in that I was invited to join the EBU Teletext Working Party based in Geneva, which used to meet every 3 months. And as a result of that, I got to visit nearly all of the European broadcasters who were using BBC standard teletext. So that included Holland, Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Germany. I was going to say Spain, but I don't think Spain were actually using teletext at that point. Italy, certainly. Australia, Malaysia, all used British standard teletext. And as you said, Dan, I was very lucky. I was invited to go over to Chicago to help set up and run America's first commercial teletext service, which was called KeyFax, based in Chicago. It was obviously based very heavily on the CFAX model with news, sport, business, weather information, but also a lot more leisure information, and it went down very well. Again, it was almost like turning the clock back to when CFAX first started, because there were only a limited number of teletext-equipped sets in Chicago. But to try to publicise the service, we were going out on something called WFLD Channel 32, which was a VHF station, and they went dark overnight from midnight until 6 o'clock. And we suggested to them that if they just kept the signal on the air, we would fill it with rolling teletext pages, similar to CFAX Envision or Oracle Envision. And we did that for a period of about 18 months, creating basically a six-hour-long programme consisting of rolling teletext pages, latest sports results, lots and lots and lots of graphics, animated graphics that actually went in between the various segments. And I spent an awful lot of my time creating animated teletext graphics, pixel by pixel. We did actually have a digitizer in the second year that we were there, but that was great fun.
Welcome to Night Owl, your late-night news and information program from KeyFax. KeyFax is a revolutionary information service which features the latest news, sports, business, weather, and entertainment. Night Owl blasts off at 12 midnight every night here on Channel 32, WFLD Chicago.
And certainly the reaction to the teletext Envision was quite remarkable. It registered on the Nielsen and Arbitron ratings. I think it got up to about 6% at one point, which when you think about, you know, you're asking people to do something they don't normally do, which is read their televisions. At least at that point, it wasn't that usual. And that was quite exciting. And we used to get lots and lots of feedback from people. Again, going back to what you were asking earlier on, Dan, if you made a mistake, the phone would ring off the wall. But it was good fun.
On my travels, I went to 4 different countries. The best one was Cyprus. That was setting up for a betting, because the MRG Systems did a lot of work with betting companies, and teletext was used a lot for sending the latest betting information out. And in Cyprus, I was set up some inserters in their TV station to accept pages from the various betting organisations, and then they'd be sent out on air from there. And that work hasn't ended, because although I'm not being paid for it anymore, the software that I've written is actually being rolled out in Cyprus right now, because since analog shut down, they still want to drive their analog TVs. So what they're doing is they're feeding the signal over the internet and then into a Raspberry Pi, and then one Raspberry Pi can operate a whole bank of televisions just like in the old days. So that is being rolled out at the moment. Another country I went to and spent a lot of time in the middle of winter in the bottom of their basement was in Germany, RTL. They have an advertising system that was... It takes signals from the central broadcaster, and then when it gets sent out over Europe, there's a signal which switches advertising, so they can have local advertising in Germany and another one for Switzerland and another one for Luxembourg or regions of Germany. So when that signal goes, a lot of automatic switching goes on and drops in the local adverts. That network is all over Europe, so I went in there to sort that out. I've also been to Ireland. Airtel sends pages out from Paddy Power. At least they used to. I don't know what they do now. So that was another trip. And another country, which some people might not even count as a country, but I did go there a few times, Wales. Went to HTV in Cardiff, and for some reason the hub of the network was in Cardiff, and from there I had internet-controlled inserters all over the different HTV regions in London and Yorkshire and all that. It was a system that took pages from London and then inserted local pages, so that I think 500 to 550 was reserved for local stuff. So that was the extent of my international travel. So.
If I could just jump in there briefly, Dan, it was Peter mentioning Wales that brought it back to my mind. After I'd left CFAX and KeyFAX, I came back over to the UK to run a company called Intelfax Limited, which provided the Fortel teletext service for Channel 4. Initially, that was the only contract that we had, but we slowly expanded to the point that when I left it in 2001, it was providing teletext for about 35 different broadcasters, including all of the ITV regions, and also for S4C in Wales. And obviously, S4C is primarily a Welsh language channel. So in our London office, we had 6 Welsh speaker teletext journalists. We were taking, because they shared a lot of the schedule with Channel 4, we were taking those pages from the Fortel service, inserting them into the local S4C signal coming out of Cardiff, and then adding on Welsh language teletext pages on top of that, which were sent down there from London. Intelfax actually had 2 different divisions. There was the editorial division that did the teletext pages, subtitling, and other text-related material. But there was also a company called Intelfax Developments Limited, which did something very similar to MRG, that we were producing teletext inserters, subtitle equipment, and page creation equipment as well.
All right, that's brilliant. So the day-to-day job, obviously, working there at Teletext, it's the forefront cutting-edge technology, great place to work. How did working practices sort of change from, like, the inception of Teletext? Like, how many people in the office must have been quite small? But how reliant did the media become on Teletext towards the end? And do you think that's actually being missed now? And I'd just like really to bolt onto that. Where do you think we would be now in a world where we didn't have Web Zero Teletext?
Yeah, I think it's a very fair question, Carl. When I first started at CFAX, as I say, I was the only journalist working on it on a full-time basis. In the first round of recruitment, they took on 8 people. There were 4 journalists, sub-editors, and 4 researchers. This is in the editorial operation. From a technical point of view, we were supported by BBC Engineering. BBC Research Department at Kingswood Warren
have always, rightly or wrongly, claimed to be the organisation that invented teletext in the first place as a way of transmitting subtitles for the deaf. I know that's a very contentious thing to say, because I think the IBA would probably jump up and down and say, no, it was ITV who invented it. But I suppose because I used to work for the BBC, I've always gone down the BBC route. I think to answer your question, Carl, the working practices, it was very haphazard to start off with. It wasn't very well structured. As the service grew and more people went out and bought teletext sets and used the service, it became a much more regimented operation and much more like a normal BBC newsroom in lots of ways. In the early stages, it was almost a sort of circus, really. We made it up as we went along. In the latter stages, they had a whole level of management was put into it. And, I mean, basically, it was a very efficient operation. And I think it provided a great service right the way up until they actually pulled the plug on it. I feel quite privileged because I was there at the beginning, and I also went back to Television Centre in 2012 when they pulled the plug on CFAX for the last time, turned the inserters off in London. I think it set new standards for concise reporting of news and sport and other late-breaking information. When you've only got 75 to 80 words on a page, you have to write concisely and you have to be very accurate. And I think that was the real thing that CFAX and Oracle and other teletext services, that's the legacy. It was actually, if you like, showing people the right way to present news.
And this is all the complicated machinery which goes into bringing up all those facts on the television screens. And luckily, I've got Ian Morton-Smith, or Mort as he's known to his friends, to explain some of it to me. Now, what are you doing at the moment? This is the page, isn't it?
Yes, I'm updating a news page at the moment. I'll just put that one back in. The news here in the CFAX office is updated from about 6 o'clock in the morning until midnight,
really?
So 7 days a week. Yeah, so it's an early start.
Hours.
Yeah, that's right.
This must be one of the main advantages of CFAX, really.
It is. The point about it is that most people think about it just as a news service, but it's much more than a news service, really. We do all sorts of different things. We update the news, as I say, but we do recipes. I'll think, see if I can find you an example of a recipe. Ah, well, this is one of our fun pages for the children.
Yeah.
The idea is that...
I was going to see what we have to do.
Yes.
Can you guess what has been drawn on this page? I see. So you have to...
You have to try and rearrange this into a well-known shape, basically.
Oh, go on. See what
the
answer
is. A helicopter.
Yeah. Oh. That's a lot of fun. I saw a recipe page somewhere.
You did indeed.
I see.
That's the sort of recipe that we do. And these recipes change every day.
Where do you get them from, out of interest?
Oh, well, we get them from our own staff. And we have researchers here who look into things like recipes and gardening, that sort of thing, and produce pages for the CFAX output.
Okay. So, Peter, in your time working with teletext, how have you seen the medium change? I guess from a more engineering point of view, maybe.
Well, I didn't work with teletext in the 80s, but I was on the same floor as the Oracle news team. They looked very professional. They had their PDP machines whirring away and massive keyboards with coloured keys. I didn't know what they were doing at the time, but they had a direct feed from ITN, so that they could mirror what was going out on the news. So they had a very close connection. But that Oracle was split into two lots. There was the news organisation on top of ITN, and then there was the other stuff, which was somewhere else.
Marshall Street.
Was it? Ah, right. Okay. But I was next door, so we just shared the same floor. I only got into teletext in 1999, and at that time there were a lot of big inserters with big PCs, and that was all being replaced by little 1U rack mount systems that had their own processors. So everything was getting smaller and lower power. But I had to maintain some of the old systems, and the oldest system that I maintained came from the middle of the 80s, and they only switched it off last year. This was at Farnborough Airport. They had a system where people could enter the weather and anything, any notice, the notices to airmen. They had a lot of information about emergency phone numbers, runway details, you know, the elevation above sea level, angles, and all those sort of things that they might need to know. and all the emergency things in case a radio was broken and it would only go one way, how they could signal to that plane. So all that was on a full field teletext inserted. What full field means is that instead of the VBI, which is just that much of the picture carrying teletext, it's all of the picture carrying teletext. So it could go through all of the pages in a quarter of a second. So from the time you typed in the page to the time you got the page was no more than a quarter of a second. So there was the meteorological person putting the forecast in hour by hour and the observations. And then there was people putting in special events going on and local flying restrictions and all that sort of thing. And the control tower would have that, several terminals. The high-level controllers, they would have that information as well. And when it was the Farnborough Air Show, the same signal was sent out over UHF to all over the airfield so that all the organisers could have their own box so that they could see what was going on in the airport. And that was put in the middle of the 80s. It's gone through a dozen PCs since then, still running DOS. And it was only switched off last year. It was replaced by a system based on Android tablets. But it lasted all that time, and it was still going strong on the original pair of inserters. They were such low power and low stress, they go on forever.
Carl, I believe you had a question there.
Well, yeah, no, thank you. It's a bulletproof bit of equipment, by the sounds of it. It's really good at standing the test of time. I think before we want to go into a Q&A segment pretty soon with the audience, which there are plenty of for everybody who's listening in at a later date in the future. But just want to ask one last question to me, from me to Moore and to Peter. What was the silliest story that you had to report and then follow up and regularly update on?
No pressure here at all, obviously. That's a really good question. I'm going to pass over to Peter while I think about that. He said, copping out.
Well, I was never on the editorial side, but I can tell you one embarrassing thing that you could have seen on the BBC. But nobody noticed it, not even Peter Weitzel, the boffin who was supposed to keep an eye on everything. If you tuned to BBC One, I think it was, it would say COE. It was the packet 830 format 1. Station identifier. When you tune in the station, it would briefly pop it up at the bottom of the screen. It should have said BBC One, but it said COE. And what had happened was that somebody had forgotten to calculate the parity on this packet, which meant that any characters that had the wrong parity, they didn't get shown. So it just happened that BBC, out of BBC One, the only letters that came out was COE. And if that popped up on your television, you knew that was one of our old inserters that we hadn't updated yet.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, what I'll do is I've stood up. If anyone's got a question, hand goes up. I'll go over and get the microphone closer to you so you can get on the podcast as well.
Yay, you'll be broadcast all over the world.
So
not on teletext, though.
No,
unfortunately.
Not yet. We'll figure that out. We'll have a
chat. We'll work something out with Peter on TFX.
It's only going to take two beers, I reckon. Yeah. We'll figure that out. No time at all.
Right, so any questions from the audience? Over here.
We have a hand up over here. Right. I'll do my best, David Dimbleby. I say, you there with the glasses.
You there. How far does that stretch?
It goes quite far. Let's see. Only if you're really angry.
I was wondering to what extent, if any, CFAX and teletext played into like emergency plans for, like, because it was during the Cold War, teletext would be a really good way of saying, you know, remain indoors, shut your windows, don't breathe in radiation or whatever. Was it used or planned to use in that way?
Yes, it was. We did a lot of work with the Home Office about using teletext as an emergency broadcast system in the event of a national emergency. And there were lots of contingency plans for basically dropping the whole of the broadcast output and replacing it with a single page or rolling subpage of national emergency information. It was all set up Fortunately, we never had to use it, but yeah. And I'm sure the same is true for Oracle as well.
What sort of emergency messages might you have had to broadcast? Can you reveal that, or are you under contract still not to?
Yeah, if you've just been bombed, 100. If you've just seen a cloud burst over a nearby village, 200. So, and the latest results, USSR 1, everybody else nil.
Well, I can tell you that I knew of two locations that could be used to transmit other stuff. One was under Whitehall, and there's another one owned by the BBC, which I won't say where it is. They had backup equipment, and the whole broadcast chain could be switched to there if need be. One of the last things that I worked on was called regional recall, and if something big happened, London could actually press a button and all of the regions would be switched back to London. It would override the whole lot and switch it back to London. And MRG still should have the code for that, but unfortunately they switched off that system. But Peter Whitesell had found two bits hiding in packet 830 format 1, and he got me to reuse them for regional recall and an alert, so that the regions could be either alerted that something had happened, or London could just override them and switch programs to London instantly.
Just a related question, I guess, for both of you. Did anybody ever hijack teletext or hack it to display something naughty? Or I'm not suggesting that the journalists might have done this. What about the alleged hidden messages that were sent home by Colin McIntyre?
I knew you were going to bring that one up. In the early stages, as I said, there were only four teletext sets out in the UK, and one of them was in the home of Colin McIntyre, the first editor of CFAX, and he used to use it as a private messaging service. So when he was about to leave Television Centre, he'd send a message on a back page of the magazine to his wife saying, "Put the dinner on." Who said messaging is a new idea?
And there was also commercial use of the packets until, I think, the BBC got told not to use them because they weren't supposed to be making any money. They did have a system that was used by the Milk Marketing Board that was used to organise tankers that would tell the farmers when to expect a tanker to arrive. And I heard that this network got used for some other purposes, and Peter Whitesell did mention that romances and whatever happened, you know, if the farmer's wife, lady knew when the tanker driver was going to come round. You'll have to ask Peter for more of those details.
Is there anything extra to be added there at all?
I don't think so. Okay. Not safely.
I think that's all that has to be said. So, any more questions from the floor? We've got one here.
One for more. So, during your Intel Fax era with Foretold on View, there was lots of animated sequences. Just wondering how long it took to do, what was involved in the process.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a very good question. This followed on from what we did with Night Owl in Chicago, with these sort of very crude animations. In Chicago, the pages were just basically updating once a cycle, and we were using 8 VBI lines in Chicago. So they were going fairly quick, but, you know, it was something like once every couple of seconds. When we started Intel Fax and we realised that we were going to be able to use quite a lot of downtime for Foretell on View, one of the guys who used to work for Logica, is a guy called Ray Goff, left Logica and came to work for Intel Fax. He was a design engineer, and he created the Aston keyboard, which was the one that Peter was mentioning a long while ago with the coloured keys on it. And he was a very talented engineer, and he came up with something called a Write Box, R-I-T-E, which stood for Rolling InVision Teletext Engine. And basically, it could transmit pages very quickly, so you've actually got pretty good animations. Channel 4 commissioned it, bought the design effectively off the table. Ray built it and installed it at Charlotte Street. And basically, we were using a digitizer to create a teletext image, and then animating it basically by either adding or removing pixels from each one of the images, loading them into the Write Box, and it would hold up to 9,000 teletext pages, which, if they were transmitting as fast as possible, would provide you with about 10 minutes of animation. That was how we did it. And we actually ended up selling it to a lot of other overseas broadcasters as well.
brilliant. Britain again at the forefront of exporting everything else to the world, and the rest of the world carrying on using it while we're here not really using it at all.
No.
Hi there, I'm 4T. You can find me on 4Tel with my friend George.
Channel 4's teletext services. Sit!
Humans, I ask you.
So, any more questions? No? Well, I actually have a question for Mort, because we mentioned KeyFax a couple of times and the NetTel service. Well, first of all, what became of KeyFax in the States? And secondly, not to give away the answer to the first question, why don't you think teletext caught on in the United States?
I'll answer the second part of that question first, Dan.
Yes, it was a poorly worded question. I apologise.
The short answer to that is it was not invented there. They just could not work out how British technology was so far ahead of them. And I mean, it sounds strange to say that in the context of something like teletext, but they didn't invent it. And it was only a guy called Marshall Field who ran the Chicago Times newspaper and had about six VHF TV stations across the United States. He came to London for a conference and he saw CFAX and he made the connection. He was a very sort of far-sighted guy. He saw what CFAX could do. He thought, I've got all the news sources coming in with the newspaper and I've got these television stations. We can start doing this in the United States. He went back to the States, talked to Zenith, who were the biggest manufacturer of televisions in the States, and said, if I start a service, would you guarantee to make the receivers that will pick it up? And he got an agreement with them. Then they came back to CFAX. I happened to be on duty when a guy called Benjamin Barton Smiley III, he was a Texan, surprisingly, was sent over by Marshall Field to take a look at the CFAX operation. I showed him around the newsroom, and shortly thereafter, I got an invitation to go over to Chicago to help them start up a teletext service. It worked in Chicago. It was very successful. It was also started up in Los Angeles and in Cincinnati by TAF Broadcasting, and it really was making great strides. And then it just died a death, and I strongly suspect that that was due to a gentleman called Rupert Murdoch, who came in and bought the Chicago Sun-Times and said, this is a stupid idea, we don't need teletext in the United States, and killed it. And I always thought it was such a missed opportunity. The British Overseas Trade Board spent a lot of money and effort trying to roll it out into different TV stations in the United States. And as I say, Murdoch pulled the plug on it, and that was the end of it. And it was a real missed opportunity.
Thank you.
That's brilliant. That's a very good. I never actually realised that. I thought that was because they just ran an NTSC system that didn't have enough lines of data or anything like that.
Capacity.
Yeah, the capacity and everything was there. It was just the just not theirs.
It's because they hate Britain secretly.
Well, we might go on to that to our second one. Yeah.
Can I just add a brief anecdote? One of the things that we did with KeyFax was to go to the National Cable Television Association meeting in Las Vegas to try to sell the idea to cable operators. And I was on the stand along with Ben Smiley, who was, because he was Texan, could speak Spanish very well. And there were a couple of guys who walked onto the stand to look at it. This is in 1982, okay? Date's important. And these two guys were looking at KeyFax, you know, and chattering away in Spanish. And I went to go up to them, and Ben grabbed me by the arm, pulled me back and said, shut up and sit down. And I said, what's the matter, Ben? And he said, they're Argentines, and we're at war with Argentina at the moment, so it's probably best that you don't talk to them.
No. Well, does anybody else have any more questions from the floor at all?
Okay. No.
Well, I don't know about you, Dan. It's been an absolutely brilliant morning.
Yes.
So far, it's so good.
And so enlightening, I think.
Yeah.
As ever on the Teletext Star podcast.
Yeah. For sure. It's probably, and it's been really good to have two great, illustrious guests on for the first one as well.
Before we finish, can you explain the material that you have in front of you, Mort?
Mort's brought some magazines along.
Yes.
I knew we'd made it when we made it onto the front cover of Assistant Librarian magazine. I actually got my photograph in it sitting at a teletext terminal because the Association of Assistant Librarians decided it would be a really useful thing for them to get involved with. So that was the first one.
These certainly look quite old.
Oh, yes, they are.
1970s.
That's the original launch pack for the Fortel Telethet service, showing that I haven't changed my appalling taste in shirts. Sorry.
Oh, I love the beard.
And that was the original Fortel Telethet team, four ladies working at Charlotte Street. And one of the things that I've always been quite pleased about was this is a letter that was sent on the launch of Fortel from John Whitney, who was the Director General of the IBA, which basically says, on behalf of the IBA, I welcome the birth of Fortel Teletext. When 10 years ago, the IBA engineers first developed Oracle, working as keen rivals to those bent on creating CFAX, the IBA noted how seldom an entirely new form of broadcasting is developed. Even wideband cable and satellites are, after all, only new ways of delivering pictures in viewers. Teletext can be seen as a true child of the 1970s. So in warmly welcoming the second generation baby Fortel, I also send greetings to the parent service Oracle, from which it springs as such a happy event. The Chinese have a saying, success has 1,000 fathers, failure is an orphan. I am therefore happy to claim, on behalf of the IBA, to be just one of 1,000 well-wishing, nail-biting, yet confident fathers of Teletext.
Oh, how wonderful. Okay, so would we be able to take some pictures of these and stick them online?
Yeah, that'd be
excellent.
Good.
So the group. So the people out there listening to this can view them themselves, yes?
Yes, peruse them at their leisure.
Excellent. So anything else to add, Carl, Peter, Mart?
No, thank you very much for the opportunity. It's great to be able to revisit Teletext. I spent a lot of my life enjoying working in Teletext, and I really thought that period of my life was over. So this is a real treat for me to be able to reminisce and talk about the early days of Teletext. Thank you.
Well, no, thank you both as well. It's absolutely brilliant. And I must say that the babe on the front of the Assistant Librarian magazine, don't leave that hanging around too long.
Right. That is a lady called Liz Donnelly, who was actually Desmond Donnelly's daughter, the MP. And she was one of the four researchers that was taken on to work on CFAX.
Oh, there you go. See, it's a contracting world. Well, I think if we wrap up this first part, because we've got a lot more coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you both here. And sharing the time that you've your Teletext memories. And like you say, you're always welcome back, both of you, to share in any events that we have in the future, because the culture, the subculture and the history, Teletext has become history too quickly.
But yes, that's enough prattle from us, isn't it? Prattle, is that a word? Prattle. That's enough prattle from us.
Hands up for prattle. Yep, it's definitely not a word.
It's a cross between chatter and prattle.